Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And fellas, it was a bad day yesterday for the SEC. We talked on the show about the LSU-Florida game potentially being in jeopardy. We'll get to that here in just a second. But Alabama football coach Nick Saban and athletic director Greg Burns testing positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday. And I'll be honest, guys, like when it first came out that the SEC was going to play, number one, obviously you're excited because you want to see SEC football. But when you're thinking about just like the COVID risk involved, like I thought, you know, like if the college kids get it, they'll probably be fine. They'll probably be okay. That's what the data and the numbers tell you. The first guy I thought of, like when this conversation began, was like, what happens if like Nick Saban gets COVID? And here we are. Nick Saban has been diagnosed testing positive for COVID-19. Now, good news is, you know, he looks fine. He said he really wasn't feeling any symptoms whatsoever. But big news yesterday in the world of college football, Nick Saban testing positive for COVID-19.
Yeah. I mean, so far asymptomatic, which is great. You know, this is something that I think everyone should have known was going to, not specifically this person or that person,
right,
but this was going to happen. It feels like it's happened really fast in the SEC. You go from Vanderbilt, Missouri, then you get, I mean, you got the Florida thing just in the past week. You got, you know, and you got Dan Mullen saying, let's pack the stadium, but now you have this Florida outbreak. You have that game now impacted. And then, of course, this game. As of now, Georgia, Alabama is on. We'll see. You know, I think one thing with the SEC, I think that they did a lot of this right, but I think the NFL and the Big Ten, one difference is the daily testing, and I think that that's something that I should probably be beefed up here by the SEC. When you have this situation, you've got the money to do that, and I think they should do that. But right now, this game is on. And then you think about what will that mean to Nick Saban? Now, again, hopefully he's asymptomatic and he's fine, and he gets through this and he's back soon. But this is potentially the game of the year in college football.
Yeah.
The greatest coach ever in college football will not be participating. Has that been confirmed for sure? I mean, I think it's obvious.
I don't know if I've seen that confirmed.
I didn't
for
see
sure,
him
but
say
I don't
it.
Think there's any way that he would be able to, right?
Right.
Like, it's not like you could watch in and zoom in. I mean, they're not going to let you do that.
Well, that's the interesting thing, too, is where I was going was sort of like, will Saban, you know, I mean, what's he going to do during the game? You know, if he's feeling fine, but he can't be there. Steve Sarkisian is the I guess, what, interim or just short-term replacement head coach. Like, what's Saban doing during the game? He's just sitting there. He's just sitting at home watching it.
Has some little Debbies, throwing them back. I don't know.
Look. I mean, it's like the good news is asymptomatic, and you know he'll be back soon. It looks like, but it's an interesting situation for this game. Hopefully, the game can take place and the teams aren't affected. You know, the fact that it's their AD as well. Who knows? You know, I think there's definitely some of what we saw with the NFL that is impacting the SEC now in terms of travel, in terms of incubation period, teams, you know, and then so far it has not been passed as far as we know on the field, and hopefully that'll continue. But this game will be really interesting from that perspective. Steve Kerr, and it's sort of a tryout for him, for Sark, who's kind of reviving his career.
And Nick Saban addressed the media yesterday in a Zoom press conference talking about his testing positive for COVID-19. Here's what Nick Saban had to say.
Well, you guys know that something really must be bad wrong. As much as I look forward to these Wednesday press conferences, for me not to be there with you today. But I was informed early this afternoon that I had a top positive test for COVID-19 on a PCR test. At this point, I'm completely asymptomatic, feel fine. Our medical officials have told me as long as I remain asymptomatic, I will have a daily PCR testing per SEC protocol to confirm the initial positive. I found this out about 1 o'clock today. I came home. I informed our team by Zoom. I watched practice today. I talked to the team after practice today, all by Zoom. I actually could speak with a manager if there was anything that I thought was not going correctly. So we're still doing everything possible to get ready for the Georgia game, preparing our team.
And that's Alabama coach Nick Saban yesterday addressing the media and was, I mean, as you heard there, lighthearted about it, was kind of having fun with the media, and seems to be asymptomatic at this point. So obviously your well wishes are with Nick Saban and Greg Byrne as they go through this, but hopefully he remains asymptomatic and gets back on the field as soon as possible.
Right. And that game happens. And, yeah. You know, LSU Florida, we know, will not happen. So that, I believe, is December 12th, right? Same,
yep.
Same date as the Vanderbilt Missouri game. So then how much of a ripple effect are we talking about? Are we talking about a ripple effect through this league now? You know, it's come. Again, the Big Ten's coming soon, and I think you're really going to see. Now, they have the daily testing, but they also have a way different standard to put on a game. So there's a lot of games ahead that are scheduled that won't take place.
And two postponements this week so far in the SEC. Vanderbilt, Missouri, obviously postponed on Saturday. LSU, Florida as well. We talked about that a little bit yesterday on the show and brought up Dan Mullen and the comments that he had about wanting to see the stadium filled in Florida. Yesterday, he kind of backtracked a little bit about the comments he made over the weekend. Here's what Dan Mullen had to say.
I'll try to clarify those comments again from my Monday press conference, which was this. You know, we played Texas A&M last weekend. I don't know what their capacity within the stadium was, but I thought the people that were at the game, all of their fans, created an exciting game day environment. They brought a lot of energy to the stadium, and I think that certainly helps all the players on the field. We're pretty blessed here in Florida to play in the Swamp and the Gator Nation. When the Gator Nation's in the stands, they bring a tremendous amount of energy. It's one of the great things about playing a part of the energy that the fans bring and how that helps and supports the team. And as I said on Monday, to me, one of the things I want to encourage with whatever our local health officials come out and say the number of people, this is the number of people that we're going to allow at the game right now, that we want to make sure that, you know, I want to encourage those people to come in, bring the energy, bring the excitement into the stadium, you know, and help our team to win and bring that energy that they bring of what makes the Swamp such a special place to go play in.
So what's your reaction when you hear that, Joe, from Dan Mullen, kind of going back and clarifying some of the comments he made on Monday, which I'm not sure how much clarification was in there.
Yeah, I have a bigger problem with just the idea right now of absolutely, like the fact that the governor of Florida is even making this discussion possible. That's the biggest problem I have with it because, you know, look, we're pushing forward with this stuff and everything's, it's not going perfectly, but we knew it wouldn't go perfectly. But what are you going to get if you just cram people into stadiums right now? I mean, you're going to spread the virus, you know? So, I think in the first place, like, good on you, Miami Dolphins, for saying, yeah, we'll just keep it how it is. We want some fans, but we also want to try to be safe and not spread the virus. But, yeah, Dan, I mean, I get what Dan Mullen's saying there. I understand. Like, you want a good atmosphere. It made an impact. When watching that game, it felt like it made a big impact. So I understand the desire as a coach to have as much of that as possible, but you also have to know that it's packing the stadium is irresponsible right now.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. CD texts in, says Dan is doing a lot of backtracking there. I mean,
yeah.
When you say that on Monday and then it comes out later in the week that you're not even going to be able to play the game,
I mean, you're gonna be absolutely a poster boy for people ripping on you, no doubt.
And I don't think that's a big surprise. So hopefully, like, you know, this Florida thing, I think the last count I saw was 19. I would assume yesterday they had more to go ahead and make the decision to cancel the game. When we're talking about scholarship players, I don't know. I never saw a number come out.
Well, I don't know that they necessarily got below the threshold, but. You know, just the fact that you have that many positives and you, how many might be affected, then do you want to go? That's the thing. I mean, you don't even have to be below the threshold to not have a game, right? It's just like, yeah, we have an outbreak, so we can't have a game. Like, we might still have 60 guys, but we're still not going to play this game. I don't know what the number is right now, but it's the right decision.
And, like, the travel part of it is that's where they're running into some issues.
Right.
I mean, you heard Nick Saban kind of talk about it yesterday, and basically what he said was, you know, we all feel pretty safe in the bubbles that we've got here. When you're at home or when you're at the practice facility, things are pretty easy. They're not, maybe not easy is the right word, but they're manageable there. But once you go on the road, like, you're exposed to all kinds of different things that it's just hard at that point to manage the virus. And, you know, Munson and I were talking before the show, like, you know, you've seen some of these SEC coaches just, like, totally disregard the mask, like Jeremy Pruitt wearing the hood or whatever he's doing with that thing. Like, Saban had his mask on the whole time and still ends up getting the virus. Like, it's just – there are a lot of problems you run into on the road that just make it tough to deal with. The travel part of it's just – I think we're learning more and more. That's where this thing can really get spreading.
Yeah, and it's – you know, like, so NFL teams can just add as many planes or buses as they want. Now, Power 5 teams have funds too, but yeah, it's still a little different in college.
When we come back, what do we make of this Alabama-Georgia game? Joe called it potentially the game of the year in college football. Who should be the favorite? We'll discuss that next. But first, make sure the big night at the museum, Modern Masters Music, will hold history in their hands, playing timeless songs on some of the country music's most treasured instruments. Premiering at 8 p.m. on October 28th, live on the Country Music Hall of Fame's YouTube channel, Big Night is a much-needed fundraiser for the museum and an unprecedented musical event. Subscribe at countrymusichalloffame.org/YouTube and tune in on October 28th. Some of the artists performing include Kane Brown, Miranda Lambert, and Tim McGraw, so make sure you're tuned in for that. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
In terms of the duties and how they're going to be divided, Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, is going to continue to handle preparation within the building. Saban, as he shared on that Zoom call, will continue to follow his routine. Everything that he normally takes care of on a Thursday, he will take care of. But from home, the plan is for the show to come here to Tuscaloosa following all the appropriate protocols. Of course, no live crowd. We haven't had one all season. We'll be socially distanced and masked. We'll take every proper measure that the school and the SEC dictates that we should. And right now, the plan is for the show to emanate from here. But remember, players are going to be tested, and so much can change between now, Saturday morning, and Saturday night and kickoff.
That was Tom Rinaldi from ESPN, just kind of breaking down the situation going on right now with the Alabama Crimson Tide. We discussed in the last segment, Joe, Nick Saban testing positive for COVID-19. Looks like Steve Sarkisian at this point would kind of fill in as that guy that takes over the head coaching responsibilities with Saban out, which talk about some shoes to come in and fill there. But
no Butch, huh?
Yeah, no Butch. Somebody on Twitter yesterday asked, like, how many people have to be out for Butch Jones to come in and be the head coach for Alabama on Saturday?
Well, it's kind of hard to coach.
Butch slander.
It's kind of hard to coach, man, when you got to, like, wash cars, got to
go pick up some food.
Cleaning, yeah. Got to pick up food. Like, poor it's hard Butch to be a coach and do all these things. Like, so Butch Jones has a lot on his plate, people. Like,
he's probably down the line.
He's probably the second busiest man at Alabama. Like, yeah, he pump the brakes on Butch Jones. Like, cut him some slack. He's busy. He's getting Nick Saban's dry cleaning.
Honestly, forgot he was there again. And then Saturday night, they were playing against Ole Miss, and Najee Harris went back to the sideline. And I look up, and there he is, old Butch on the sideline, just standing there clapping.
But oh, I was like, did he give Najee, like, a water bottle?
Or? Man, you guys, I tell you.
I love
poor
Butch, man.
Poor Butch.
I love Butch, man.
Yeah, the Butch jokes are easy. They are.
They are easy, man.
What was the job he was going to take? He was going to take Rutgers.
I think it was a bricklayer job, construction site.
Yeah, masonry.
But really, though, it was Rutgers what?
I think, yeah.
Rutgers what? It was like tight ends coach or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Now, wasn't he in there for like Maryland, too? Like a Maryland coaching job?
I think, yeah, maybe that's right. Yeah, maybe I had it mixed up. But, you know, Butch can be a head coach. Like, he was pretty good at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Now that program was in pretty good shape when he got there. But, you know, Butch can do some stuff. He wasn't up for the Tennessee job, clearly, right? But I look for better things ahead for Butch.
Do you?
I do. We're all going to have fun with Butch. I'm just saying, like, realistically, the guy brings some value to the coaching profession.
I mean, he's had a heck of an internship at Alabama. He's been there for like 4 years, hasn't he? What's he doing?
You know, those internships sometimes
he's still getting paid by Tennessee, isn't he?
Well, yeah.
I don't know how much school credit he needs, so maybe that's why he's there.
Could be.
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah.
But he's not going to be coaching on Saturday against Georgia.
It'll be Sark. So here's a question, and I'm just going to be very transparent here. I just ripped this off from ESPN, but if Alabama loses Saturday, do they get any break because they didn't have Saban?
Yeah.
From the playoff committee?
Yes.
Yeah, no question? Absolutely. Okay.
That's going to matter. Look, I'll be honest with you. After watching Georgia play, I think Alabama's got a pretty good chance of losing anyway.
No, I agree.
If Saban's there, because that defense right now for Bama.
But that's the point.
Has got some holes.
Right, so that's the point to me is like how much, how much of a break do you deserve? The other team was worthy anyway and beat you. What is Nick Saban going to – there's got to be value to having Nick Saban on the sideline, right?
I guess it would depend. I mean, look, if Alabama loses, probably going to see Georgia again at some point would be my guess, because the West right now, it's not great outside of Alabama, which we didn't expect.
Which is weird to say.
Coming into this year. But if Georgia wins this game, you probably get another chance if you're Alabama in the SEC championship game. To me, I mean, I think Alabama's got some wiggle room here, to be honest with you, because I think – I look around the West right now. They already hammered Texas A&M. Auburn doesn't look good right now. LSU looks horrible on defense right now. Like, I think Alabama is going to run away with the West. They almost, to me, unless they just get shelled, they've got a mulligan here. And look, I mean, they're still going to be favored to win this game, without Saban.
But of course, the problem with a mulligan, yeah, I hear you, and you're right. You're probably right. They're probably going to be there even if they win this game. But then you could have the mulligan in that game. You know, that you don't have now.
Yeah.
That you would get now, you get it early. You can't have two, right?
No.
So, it's interesting. If Saban is, and like, look, if he remains asymptomatic, as he hopefully does, and feels fine, he's going to be involved in the discussions, right? I mean,
yes.
A lot of this stuff is done differently anyway. So.
And it's not like Saban's out there calling the plays on game day anyway.
Like his imprint will be on the game. His expertise, his program, all that stuff, it'll still be a Saban team, a Saban plan, right? Yeah. I mean, other people call plays. So I wonder, like, how much does it mean to just not have him physically there on the sidelines, making huge decisions, certainly, right? If it's a close game, go for two, not go for two, kick a field goal, go for it on fourth and one, whatever. Some of those decisions, that he's not there for. But beyond that, what does it mean? If he's imprinted on the game plan and he's had his hand in everything from afar, how much does it mean?
I mean, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I would think from a preparation standpoint, I mean, there's not going to be a ton of difference. I mean, there'll be some because I don't guess, it's not like Nick Saban can sit there on Zoom for 9 hours straight and do all these different things. But, I mean, there's some things he just probably won't be able to get to this week from not being in the building. But I don't think it's going to be that different. But I also look at this game, like, to me, I mean, the matchup to watch, obviously, is just the Bama offense against the Georgia defense. I mean,
fantastic.
It's strength. I mean, you're probably talking the best offense in the country against the best defense in the country. And
Clemson could probably say we have both, but yeah.
It could.
But yeah, but you might be, yeah.
Certainly that matchup is going to be interesting. And, Sark's a guy doing some game planning there. So that's something to me that when you watch that, I don't know if the preparation from that standpoint is going to change really all that much.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Like, to me, think about, just a scenario, it's a tie game. Alabama's at midfield, fourth and one. So if you don't get it, you've now put them in a position, to drive on you. But you also, you're feeling great about your offense. Like, so Sark, it's on you. What are you doing, Like, what is Nick Saban doing in that moment? Is he not texting somebody? Is he not hitting the buzzer? like beep beep beep. Sark. Could they not connect Nick to everybody? Could they not connect him from home to everyone?
I don't think that's allowed. Like, I don't think you can be sitting there at home and do that. I don't think they're going to let that happen.
Okay, but they do have cell phones.
Oh, I know, but can he just text in?
I don't know.
Hey, run this,
or not run this, but go or not. Like, it's a simple yes or no answer. You
it's going
to
be hilarious.
A huge decision for the head coach to make.
It's going
to
be hilarious when, like, Steve Sarkisian's looking at, like, his phone. And then he sees, like, bubbles from Nick Saban, like, texting back. And he's just, like, waiting and waiting.
He sees the bubbles.
Saban's
he sees
the bubbles. On FaceTime the whole game. Like, Butch Jones's job on Saturday is just to have FaceTime open at all times with Nick Saban. And just turn it around.
Well, because that's the thing. You know, if Saban is at home, then that means he's on that whatever second delay. You know? So you might have to have Butch like, okay, Nick, I'm going to keep you here. Now this is, now we got live. We got the live stream going. I don't know, man. That's got to be
a lot
tough.
Of pressure for Butch Jones.
We've seen some.
We've seen him fold under that type of pressure.
I mean, I covered a guy who, had a heart attack after a game, Mark D'Antonio, after they beat Notre Dame on one of the best coaching calls I've ever seen, little Giants fake field goal. And then he was out. They beat Wisconsin with him out, but then he was there but not really involved when they beat Michigan a couple years later or a couple weeks later. I mean, it's hard for these guys to stay away, and this is the game. I mean, this is the game for Alabama of the year. There's not another game on the schedule. I know they come to Tennessee in a couple weeks, and obviously Vols fans hope that's a game, but I mean, this is by far the game.
When we come back, we're going to switch gears, get into a little Preds talk. Sean Henry, president and CEO. The president really got me screwed up there. His Twitter handle.
Preds mess with me. President on Twitter. That's right.
Sean Henry joins us next. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you tune in this Saturday to catch the college football game of the week on ESPN 94.9, presented by Gary Force Acura. This Saturday's game is the SEC matchup we've been talking about between Georgia and Alabama. Kickoff is at 7 p.m. on ESPN 94.9. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're going to talk some Preds. And one of our favorite guests is about to join us. He's back there chatting it up with Munson at the moment, but about to join us here on the program, Sean Henry. And it's been a busy week so far, Joe, for the Predators, both on the ice and off the ice. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO. Sean, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Not a lot. Just excited for you two and for everyone that listens to the sports. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And, Sean, we haven't had you on since Roman Josi.
Oh, I know that.
Well, we've got you on now. It's been pretty hurtful,
by the way. I've been sitting at home waiting.
Well, I haven't been able to see you and give you a hug in a long time either, but I can do that next time where it's socially acceptable to do so. But Roman Josi wins the Norris Trophy. Obviously, that's a huge deal for this team and this organization. What was your reaction when you got the news that it was official and that Josi won the Norris Trophy?
It's just exciting. Like everyone, we thought he deserved it even before this year. And when it comes to the voting, sometimes the first time a guy's nominated, it kind of gets put in a waiting queue, and you have to be a bridesmaid before the bride. But we knew he deserved it. Anyone that looked at, his play, whether on the ice with the eye test or in stats, he deserved it. But we're still really excited about it because sometimes you do have to wait a little bit. So it was great. You can't ask for a better guy. You look at the past year, you signed him to basically a lifelong contract, or hopefully what becomes a lifelong contract. He gets married, expecting a baby. He and his wife pushed this community, through the tornado, through where we sit right now with the pandemic. And they're just a wonderful couple, and it's nice to see really good things happen to good people.
And, Sean, obviously, you touched on it a little bit there. It's just been a really rough year, obviously, for a lot of people, both here locally and nationally as well, dealing with the pandemic. And the organization has news that they've announced the other day that's basically an opportunity to pay it forward to your season ticket holders with the November Power Pay plan. What's going on there with the Preds and the November Power Pay plan?
Well, yeah, it sounds corny, but it's true. We talk about it all the time. We truly have the best fans in sports. And we've had this relationship that really is incredible, and it's the envy of other teams. We get calls from other leagues, other teams, trying to figure out why we have such this incredible relationship. And it's because, they get behind everything we do as an organization. And this is a small way just to say thank you. When the pandemic hit and we took a pause, what we thought was a small pause at the end of the season last year, we gave everyone the option. They could freeze their payments, push them forward a year, continue on monthly, really whatever they wanted to do. But despite all that, you know, we looked at where we're sitting and we said, you know what, let's just cut this payment. And, you know, our goal is to play 82 games next year. And if that's the case, everyone just gets a bonus, if you will. And it's where we wanted to be. And it's been pretty positive by almost everyone. It's funny, fans from other markets are saying, you know, some weird things on all the chat boards, or I guess not chat boards anymore, you know, social media. And it's funny to see our fans kind of speak out and say, no, this is what we've done. And like we say, we do it together. You know, our fans really are incredible. And we didn't think it would blow up as much as it did. And once we realized it did, you know, we wanted to talk about it a little bit more, because it's a celebration of who and what they are. And we're really fortunate. From our highest points in 2017, they were there for us, to really our community's lowest point, you know, right now, pushing through the pandemic. They've been there for us, for each other, and for those that are really, really struggling through this time.
So, Sean, in terms of this coming season, what are the discussions like right now? How do you feel about how everything's coming together there? What do you know? What can you tell us?
Well, one thing I'm really, really proud of, and I think you guys have talked about it, is last year when we looked at how do you pick up the season again and how do you take on the playoffs, what I really admired about, you know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and everyone at the league and then all of our teams, we worked together to play hockey. We didn't have a date. We didn't have a format. We didn't know what it was. And we talked about every scenario under the sun. I mean, truly every scenario. Playing everyone's buildings, playing six pods, playing four pods, two, eventually one. You know, what should we do? How should we do it? What should the format look like? Should it only be the 16 teams that qualified? Do you add another layer? And by not being dictated by what happened in the past or dates, we were able to pick it up and do something pretty cool without any incident. You know, zero positive tests. That's how we're approaching next season as well. I mean, we're not getting hemmed in by, you know, any of what we've done in the past. We want to do what's right with the right time, with the right people. And, again, we put the placeholder in December 1st because you had to pick the start for next season to go backwards for free agency and buyouts and, you know, QOs and obviously the draft. And once we realized that probably shouldn't be the right date, we moved that aspirational date to January 1. And, you know, we have – I'm on a handful of different committees with the league. So is David Poyle. Some overlap. You know, we have, I don't even know how many conference calls or Zooms a week, but what I like is everything is on the table to, you know, create the best environment for the season next year. And last year being a really nice body of work to show what we came up with, I feel really good about, you know, creating something special again.
Predators president and CEO Sean Henry on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sean, you brought up David Poyle there. He has been a busy man during the past week. What do you make of how free agency has gone for the Preds so far?
Well, I love what we did. You know, it starts with having a full complement of draft picks. You know, something that we have not enjoyed recently, because, you know, we're always adding to the roster at the trade deadline. And, you know, this year, to some extent, we resisted, and it shows, you know, when you have an extra pick and then you can do some things within it. So I love what we do at the draft. You know, I think, you know, the kid we drafted out of Russia, if you read anything about him, you know, he's the second coming of the 17 greatest goalies ever combined. And they're all right, by the way. You know, it's going to be fun to watch him develop. And then from a free agency standpoint, you know, everyone always wants to sign whoever the biggest name is, the biggest splash is. And, you know, for us, we have a really good team. We all know that. But there were some holes or some things that we wanted to improve upon. And you look at our blue line right now, and it's kind of getting back to who we are. And, you know, we always talk about the Predator way or the identity. We're changing that now. It's not about the Predator way anymore. It's setting a new standard, the gold standard. And, you know, our blue line now is as good as anyone's in the league, if not better. And you could argue that it might be our best one we've ever put together. I mean, these guys now on the third pair can, you know, play on the PK, then, which frees up, you know, our top four to do some different things on the ice, which is exciting. And then from the forward standpoint, you know, kind of getting guys that are hard to play against, that no one, you know, likes seeing on the ice at the same time as them, which then should really push, you know, our top six forwards a little bit differently. And, you know, that's what you want. You know, we have, you know, four 30-goal scorers on our team. No team in the league has more than that. You know, so a lot of people say, well, you know, why don't we sign Gretzky or Messier or Lemieux or Howe? You know, the moves we made are really good. And, you know, in the cap space world, you know, we have a little cap room left right now, which gives us some flexibility, you know, to do anything else we need to do at the right time. So I'm really excited about it. That's why I can't wait for January 1, you know, to come around and get this thing started, and hopefully our fans are as well. But I always hate July 1st, or I guess this year it turns into October 9th, because no matter if you sign the biggest name out there, you pay too much money for him. If you re-sign one of your own guys, you slighted them by not paying them more. And if you don't sign, you know, 15 All-Stars, you know, is a failed year. But once you step away from that by a few days and see what other teams have done, you recognize better and better the moves that David did this year.
Well, it also feels like a team that is going to depend more on young guys, some exciting young players in the organization, right, Sean, who are probably going to see the ice a lot more this season.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the things, you know, we have, we always talk about a couple of guys that are so valuable to the team because they can play up and down. They can play anywhere on the roster. Well, it's time to allow them the true opportunity to play up, you know, on a permanent basis. They've earned it. And then, you know, last year with the best record in the AHL, it was a shame we didn't get to finish that season. But, you know, guys that we've been looking at for a while and developing will have a real chance to play a prominent role with this team. And that's how you build great teams. You have a good core of guys that are in their prime. You have guys that are just in the, entering their prime, if you will. Got to give them a little opportunity. And what's nice is we have a handful of guys for fewer opportunities. So it's going to be fun to see, you know, Tolvanen possibly, you know, get a real opportunity to do something special. See, you know, Trenin, you know, playing a more prominent role. And you can go Pitlick and just on and on and on. And that's really, you know, what camp is going to be about. And then, you know, the first month or two of the season to see what everyone can do. And then, of course, you have other guys that, you know, have been pushed down to the third and fourth line that now have an opportunity to, you know, again, look at the roster a little bit differently. And it's going to be fun to see develop.
Predators president and CEO Sean Henry on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sean, last thing for you here. If you look back at John Hines and his tenure with the Preds so far, I mean, it's pretty amazing what he's had to deal with. You come in, immediately take over at a coaching change, and you got to deal with a tornado in the community, a pandemic, come back, go through a bubble situation. How excited are you to see what John Hines can build here once he gets a chance to put his full stamp on the team with a training camp and hopefully a full season?
Well, you summed up. I'm just excited about it. And, you know, what I hate using the word odd, unprecedented. If I hear the word unprecedented again, I might, you know, gouge my ears out. But it's true. All those words are true. But, you know, he stepped in a role. We played that night and then went on the road. When we shut down, it actually gave him an opportunity to get to know the players a little bit deeper. And it's weird. I think we all have experienced it. As we socially distance, you have an opportunity to build deeper relationships because you talk a little bit more frequently and honestly. And I hate using the word distraction, but you don't have the distraction of games. You know, so the only thing you have is an opportunity to build rapport, relationship, understand guys. And I think that turned into what we did at the draft and free agency, a broader understanding by John and his staff and, you know, working with David and our scouts and saying, hey, this is what I think we really need based on personalities and chemistry. And that just continues every day right now. And I can't wait for training camp to start because I do think we're going to see something really explosive out of this team because of the amount of time he's had a chance to spend with them. And you hear the guy's comments, and hear some comments from guys that used to play for him, and it gets you a little bit more excited. So it's going to be a fun year, regardless if we start in December or January. And I can't wait for it, and I hope all of our fans can't wait for it as well.
Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sean, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Well, I appreciate you guys, too, and it's sad that none of us are talking about baseball
because
all our team's out of it. So, I don't know. I guess we'll focus on the Giants dominant. Never mind.
It's been a tough year on that front.
Oh, boy.
Tough year. Sean, thanks
better
for
than the Jets. Better than the Jets. That's true.
Amen.
It's true. Sean Henry, ladies and gentlemen, been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. And it is interesting. You look at just how busy they've been the last week or so. I wonder, are they done? I kind of said yesterday there's still some maybe lines in the water that the Predators could have out there. We'll talk about what those could be on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week has Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers taking on Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coverage begins at 3 with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. And let me tell you, I got a good feeling about my Packers in that game. So just keep that in mind. Devontae Adams back healthy. Tom Brady may be in some trouble on Sunday.
I have a good feeling about your team, too. I don't have a great feeling about the Bucs. I don't know. Who's going to win the NFC South? I'm going Saints. You know that I'm high on the Saints.
Panthers.
I took
Panthers,
a
baby.
I tell you, though. I'm telling you.
Healthy Christian McCaffrey coming back.
I don't hate that team.
The defense, the biggest question was the defense, right? Like, obviously, you lose Luke Kuechly. That's your defensive leader. And their defenses look pretty good. I mean, obviously, we're talking about them playing Atlanta last week, so take that with a grain of salt. But, I mean, don't sleep on those Panthers now. I'm just saying.
No, I mean, it's interesting. I do think the Saints get Michael Thomas back, and they should win it. But I don't know.
You know who's not going to win the NFC South? The Atlanta Falcons. They are without a win so far on the season, and now some really bad news coming down the pike for the Atlanta Falcons. This from Adam Schefter, quote, "The Falcons are shutting down their facility after multiple positive tests for COVID-19, sources tell ESPN. So, obviously, we don't know how many multiple is, but looks like there could be a second outbreak in the NFL with the Falcons closing down their facility.
So, starting tomorrow, well, I guess tomorrow's Friday. It does feel weird. This week feels very weird. But I guess tomorrow we'll look at Tom Pelissero to tell us how many positives the Falcons have now.
Falcons have 4 positive tests this morning, according to sources. So then the question becomes, all right, does that number continue to grow throughout the week or does it stop at 4? So far, really the Titans are the only team that's seen that number continue to really spike and go upward.
Right.
Hopefully that's not the case in Atlanta, but certainly with everything we've seen here locally with the Titans, that's probably the first question you ask.
Yeah, what number was the Titans at the point where they were just like, this Steelers game's not going to happen?
That's a good question. I mean, I know that in the end, I believe it was 24 since September 24th, so that was 13 and 11 split up players and staff. At that point, I think the big thing was, it was Thursday, right?
Yep.
Was it Thursday that they decided to postpone it? So now we're talking Thursday. 4 positives. You would think Falcons Vikings would probably be moved, and here we are again. Can the NFL figure something out to not have this week 18 they're trying to not have?
And I mean, that helps the Vikings because I mean Dalvin Cook's out for a couple weeks, so if you do get this game canceled, if you do go into a bye week, maybe you get Dalvin Cook back. Maybe you're only missing him for one game instead of missing him for 2 or 3.
Yeah,
so
they already forfeited their season.
Pretty much.
With Mike Zimmer. Coaching.
The gift
Sunday
that keeps
night,
on giving.
But yeah, here we go. I mean, this is so 4. I mean, that automatically puts the Falcons probably up there. Because, I mean, how many do the Patriots have? 2 or 3 total?
Like 3 total. Yeah,
3 total. So, who'd the Falcons just play?
I can't remember. They lost.
Yeah, it was the Panthers.
Yeah,
it
was the Panthers. Yeah, so I mean that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but you always that's what you're doing now. You're looking back and you're looking forward.
Yeah.
Did they just play? Where were they? Where are they going now? It's going to be a regular part of the rest of the year.
It is. So we'll continue to monitor the Falcons situation as we go ahead here this week. 4 positive tests for COVID-19. Hopefully it stops there, but as we've seen, that may or may not be the case. So we'll continue to monitor that as the week progresses here. We had Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO, join us in the last segment. And it's interesting, Joe, because they've been very active in free agency. They've retooled the way this roster looks. Nick Menino gone, Kyle Turris gone. They brought in Luke Kunin, Brad Richardson, Nick Cousins. He mentioned the blue line, the additions of Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning as well. Lots of moving parts here for the Preds. I kind of figured yesterday that they weren't done. I mean, you look at the second line right now, and I think you're putting a lot of pressure on Eli Tolvanen to come in and produce quickly. I still think there's a move that could happen on the second line to boost the scoring a little bit. But David Poile scheduled to speak today to the media at 11 a.m. Typically, now not always, but typically that means that his work in free agency for the most part is done. Do we think the Predators are done at this point? And this could be the group that at least they're starting the season with as they begin play in the 2021 season.
I guess I'd be surprised, but like you said, normally that means something. Mark Hoffman's still sitting there, right? I know that there was a report, someone had a report that he's willing to accept a one-year deal, which is not a surprise. I think that's how a lot of guys are looking at this cap situation in this year. I don't know. I mean, maybe the Preds aren't interested, but it would make sense that they would be given what they have as holes and what he could provide. I guess, you know, Frank Saravalli did throw out, he threw out Bruins, Blue Jackets, and Preds. So there has been some expressed interest through back channels. So I don't know, maybe Poile's going to tell us he just signed Mark Hoffman at 11.
He might.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, okay, hey, let's kill two birds with one stone. I'll break the news to you, and then we can have a press conference about it.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily mean that he's done. I mean, David Poile, he does things all the time that come out of left field that you're like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen, and yet here they go. So just because he's talking today doesn't necessarily mean that he's done. But I do wonder, like, if you're the Predators and you can't make something work with Mike Hoffman, like, how many guys are left in the free agency pool that really is worth your time trying to go invest in? Like, I've heard Anthony Duclair get tossed out there. I wouldn't go anywhere past a one-year deal with him. And given how his career has gone so far, he is probably one of the guys in the free agent pool right now that may be looking for a longer-term deal. Like, maybe, I'm not saying 7 years, but probably 3-4 year deal is probably what Duclair is looking for, because he's been bouncing around trying to prove himself, played really well a year ago. I don't know if I'm the Predators, though, based on his career, if I'm willing to go more than 1 year, especially in a year like this, if Anthony Duclair is on the table.
I mean, Hoffman seems like the better option there for sure. At least the bigger upside, right? And just seems to make sense to put him with a Matt Duchene if you could get him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you look at this team right now, who is going to play with Matt Duchene? I mean, everybody just assumes Elie Tolvanen will, which I think if he's going to play and he's going to make this team, that's a logical assumption. I think he needs to play in the top six. I think he needs to play on the power play. And hopefully, if you're the Predators, he comes in and this kind of the slower approach you've taken with him in terms of getting him developed, teaching him how to play away from the puck, hopefully he comes in and that clicks and he figures it out. Because look, I'll still say, I know it hasn't happened, and I know it certainly hasn't happened as quickly as Predators fans were hoping for. I tried to warn them about this when he first came in. It's a lot to ask for an 18-year-old kid. But the talent's there. I mean, it's always been there. That shot, I've seen some pretty good shots at the NHL level. Elie Tolvanen's got a really good NHL shot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's finding a way to get him open to use it. That's got to be the step. Maybe he's figured that out. He comes in, and he's your answer on the second line. I just look around at this roster right now. I still think there's a piece or two at forward that's missing.
Right.
Now, I agree with what Sean said. Their defense right now, it looks as good as it's looked in a long time. That third pairing.
Well, that was a good point on PK.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty significant upgrade.
On you being able to use those guys some there and take a few minutes off your core, you know, your top four. That's a good point. And so, yeah, I mean, that looks good. The top line, I think we all expect now for that to be a thing, and I think it should be, but the second line to me is it's got to be a concern. I mean, I don't see, unless you have some people stepping up and doing things they haven't done before, how you get enough production out of that line.
Yeah, that's going to be something to monitor as they move ahead this year. And, you know, eventually, regardless of who they bring in and sign, their success is going to be determined on what those four guys do. Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, Duchene. They just got to be better. They got to be better than they were last season. That's not a secret. They'd be the first ones to tell you that. They weren't good enough a year ago. And they've got to find a way in the regular season to consistently produce more than they did. So we'll see whether or not they're able to do that. Whenever the season gets started, hopefully it's as close to January 1st as possible. Our good friends Joe Dubin and Justin Beasley from WSMV are blowing up my phone right now, and Joe has asked me to tell you, Rex Road, that Michigan State is no better than an auto diesel college. Take some shots at your alma mater.
Wait.
Like, I don't really know.
Why? Just randomly?
Yeah. No better than an auto diesel college.
An auto diesel college.
That's what he said.
I've never even heard of that, but I think, you know, Joe, you've
never heard of an auto diesel college?
Auto diesel college?
Yeah.
What the heck does that mean?
Maybe Michigan State's got a great auto diesel program.
Well, Michigan State, I will tell you, has one of the best agricultural programs in the country, Land-Grant University.
Yes, I'm sure it does.
Lot of many fine schools, many fine people come from there. And I won't go after Joe Dubin too much because he immediately accommodated me and changed his Twitter handle to Hardcastle and McCormick. You know, he's got like Magnum PI rolling through there and all these different 80s shows. He went right to the Hardcastle and McCormick when I asked for it, so I'm cool with you, Big Joe.
Everybody's cool with Big Joe. When we come back, our good buddy Aaron Reese from The Athletic will join us. He covers the Houston Texans. We'll break down this matchup with the Titans coming up this Sunday. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.